So our next presentation is by Kim Kaiser and Jeff Paddock, both of the Minnesota Department of Ag. Kim is originally from western Wisconsin and spent several years in central and southeast Idaho before moving back to Minnesota, where she is now with the MDA and has been a hydrologist since 2010. Jeff is also a hydrologist, with the Monitoring and Assessment Unit in the Minnesota Department of Ag. He also spent previous part of his career out west in Montana with the Montana Department of Agriculture and as an environmental consultant and an environmental driller. Their presentation is nitrate and pesticides in private wells. Welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for having us here today. Jeff and I are going to be talking about nitrates and pesticides in private wells. We're going to take a little step back from what Kevin was talking about when he was talking about more of a regional approach, the field approach. That's going to be a lot of good information for us to use down the line, but at this point we're going to take a step back and talk about the township testing program as a statewide. Okay, sorry. So here's the problem. I usually like to walk around, but I'm really afraid I will be the first one ever to walk off this podium. So try to stay right here. So we're going to take a step back, talk about nitrate at a statewide level, and get down to the township. So I always like to start our talks off by telling you how many people actually have started working on this program. It's not just Jeff and I, there's several people across the state working on it. Three or four of us are in St. Paul. So I'd like to just acknowledge Brennan Schaefer, Nicole Ross, Jamie Nielsen, Ryan Meyer, Ben Bruning, Laura Bamer, Adam McCullough, and Dylan Tim as our data manager. And then our program's really split up into two units, our monitoring unit and our fertilizer management unit. So I also like to show this slide because a lot of folks that don't work in agencies aren't really sure whose roles are who. So for the purposes of MDA, our role is really to look at nitrate and pesticides in groundwater. And the way we do that is by using our nitrogen fertilizer management plan. It's the state's blueprint to minimize groundwater impacts from the use of nitrogen fertilizer. It calls for an assessment of nitrate at a township scale, and then it also, we need to be looking at public wells. It has voluntary components and regulatory, and right now we're also going through a rule writing process that is based on this plan. I'm not going to talk a lot about that today because we're in the middle of that process, but if you want to know more information, there'll be a link at the end of the website and we can get a hold you in touch with someone who can answer your questions better than I could. So for the nitrogen fertilizer management plan, we need to assess private wells and public wells. Today we're just going to focus on the private wells, and we're going to be doing this, as the plan calls for, at a township scale. So this first slide gives you an idea of a level system we have for assessing townships. So really two things go into this. It's going to be nitrate levels in a township, and then also what kind of, if the BMPs in a township are being applied. So today we're really going to focus on just nitrate concentrations, but you just need to be aware that there is this aspect of BMP use on the land surface. So there's five levels, and those all have different nitrate concentrations. The prevention mode, if we test a township and less than 5% of the wells are over the 10 milligram per liter health risk limit, they are in a prevention mode where we're just going to continue to promote BMPs. If 5 to 9% of the wells are in, is that showing up on there? Okay. Are showing up over the health risk limit, they'll be in a level 1. What you'll see here now between level 2 and level 3, these are the same nitrate concentrations we're looking at. This is where the difference is between voluntary, regulatory, and where that BMP piece comes in. So the most important thing to think about the rest of this talk is that 10% of wells over the health risk limit. So where, when we were working on this plan and working in the committee, we were trying to figure out where do we need to look? How many townships would we are we talking here? So the first thing we thought about is, you know, where is row crop production? So we needed to get a handle on how many townships had at least 20% row crop production. That coupled with where is nitrate likely to get into the groundwater. So you can see this map in the bottom corner. It's one of a few different vulnerability maps. This was based on geomorphology, sediment association, coupled with DNR's sand and gravel layer. So this was the at the time, one of the only statewide maps we could use. So this is really just a starting point. So that gave us an idea that there could be potentially over 300 townships that are vulnerable to nitrate contamination. Now, as we get to working with the counties and getting to that smaller scale, we can add things, more better maps, such as information from the Minnesota Geologic Atlas, and even better Part Bs. And more recently, we now have the pollution sensitivity of the near surface material. So these are all tools we can start looking at when we go in and start talking to our local partners. So big picture, we're trying to prioritize townships that we're working in that are vulnerable groundwater, significant row crops. Again, we think there's going to be over 300 townships. We are estimating by 2019 we'll have offered free testing to 70,000 well owners. It is voluntary, and there's no cost to the homeowner. It is funded by clean water funds. So this is really a two-step process. We work with local partners, soil and water conservation districts, or county environmental services, to first ask if these vulnerable areas we think are vulnerable, they think are correct. And then they help us come up with the mailing list and do all our public outreach for that work. This is a homeowner-collected sample that gets sent into a certified lab. The second step, and then, is to offer those folks that have a nitrate detection in their initial homeowner-collected sample a follow-up nitrate test and pesticide sample, along with a well site visit that's collected by our MDA staff hydrologists. So originally, when this program started, we didn't have very much money. We were going to just be going back to wells where nitrate concentrations were high, and we picked five as half the HRL to go back to. However, we did receive additional funding was appropriated to us to monitor for pesticides where nitrate was detected. So this virtually doubled our budget and our ability to test more wells. In the first year, we only tested for 22 compounds. Now we're up to 124 pesticides, including glyphosate. Jeff is really going to concentrate on that pesticide aspect at the end of the presentation. And from here, I'll just talk a little bit more about what we found in the nitrate concentrations. So again, it's a two-step process. We work with the local soil and water conservation districts. We use local maps, the atlases when they're available, to really get to the best townships, not the best townships, the most vulnerable townships we should be testing in. And then the counties, they develop the mailing lists, because as we all know, there's not one list for where all of the wells are. And then they do all the outreach to township boards and other local officials. And what I'll say about this initial test is that we are, MDA needs to get at what wells are being affected by nitrogen fertilizer, but we also, in this initial test, want to see what are people drinking, regardless of their well construction. We want to know what is the risk to the population. So in that sense, anyone with a home that has a well is offered this free kit. The homeowner collects the sample themselves and they send it back into the certified lab. So in that kit, they get the sample bottle, they have an invitation letter telling them about our program. They have also get a handout telling them about the risks of drinking water that's 10 milligrams per liter and what they should do at the different levels. They get a survey about their well, and this has a lot of information about asking about the well type, well depth, age, when did you last test your well, Do you know your new unique ID, potential nitrate sources around the well? And generally, we have a 30% response rate on these. I think we bumped it up a little bit this year by adding in a reminder postcard. We just had our results back recently, so none of that is available yet. But I think every year we make a little bit more progress in upping our response rates. So for that initial data analysis, we're really doing a quick summary of results by township. We summarize those well surveys. We collect all the relevant groundwater information for the area, results by aquifer if unique IDs are available and well logs are available. And then the initial results are posted online for that short summary after the first year. Our final reports are going to be after that second year of testing. One example I wanted to show is the importance of these surveys and what people are telling us about their wells. One of the questions here, when did you last test your well for nitrate? This is an Olmsted County example, and they're all very similar. Out of 157 well owners, only 11% of people have tested their wells in the last 3-4 years. Another 18% tested between 3 and 10. About 70% have not tested their well in the last 10 years. And if you break that down even a little bit more, I believe it's just about half have no idea what they're drinking in regards to nitrate. So I think we're really providing, and along with our local partners, an important public service outreach here. As water professionals, a lot of times we talk about we really need to do more outreach and let people learn more about their wells. Well, we still are, I think, coming up a little bit short. So hopefully this program is really getting that message out there and pay attention to what's in their wells. So initial results from 2013 to 2016. This map shows in dark red the townships where 10% of the wells or more were over the health risk limit. The light pink is 5 to 9, and then the light green is less than 5%. We have tested 167 townships. 71 of those were over 10%. 10% were over the health risk limit. So again, this is the initial results. This is all wells, regardless of their construction or where they came from. So just keep that in mind. We sampled approximately 20,000 wells, and overall, so far, 9.5% of those were over the health risk limit. So then this gets us to our step two. So all those folks that had initial nitrate detection, in most cases, we have a couple different labs that we're working with that can be 0.03 milligrams per liter to 0.5 milligrams per liter, so pretty low detection levels, are offered a follow-up sample. And generally, I'd say, if you average it all, 50% of folks that sent in a sample have a detection. And then another 50% of those folks volunteer to participate in the follow-up sample. So 50% of the people that we go out and test, we document their well information, their well type, their construction. We inventory any sources that might be around the well, including now we are adding in looking around for pesticide possible sources. If septic sources are too close, animal sources, and obviously we collect the nitrate and pesticide sample. And while we're there, we're purging the well before we take the sample, and we're collecting field parameters. So in the step two data analysis for nitrate, we're looking at if that first result significantly changed from the second result, or if they're comparable. Does their survey information accurately reflect the well site visit and the well log information? And are the wells over 5 milligrams, so we're back to that 5 milligram per liter kind of cutoff, potentially impacted by commercial fertilizer? If not, they're taken out of the second round of testing, or the second analysis. So here's just an example of some of the reasons wells could be taken out. Obvious well construction problems. We're unsure of where the water source came from. Sometimes people will send in an RO sample, and then when we get there, we take a sample from their outside hose. Obvious point sources. It's amazing how many wells are in the middle of a feeding area. Hand-dug wells. There's also a category where, let's see, it's this one here. we went there and we sampled a faucet, but we really had no idea where the well was. And in the beginning, we didn't probably ask the right questions. So sometimes, you know, it's the well under the fake well. Sometimes it's under rocks. Sometimes it's in your basement. Sometimes it's in the garage. In places, it just aren't obvious. We've gotten a lot better at finding out and asking the right questions and where to look and to get access of locked well houses, those sorts of things. So here's another, I just wanted to show an example of what that looks like and how that ratio of what are the biggest reasons wells are taken out from. The biggest reasons are if we couldn't go there. If we couldn't go there, we couldn't verify well construction, we couldn't verify point sources. If there's no unique ID, we don't know when it was constructed. We even go to as far as to look up when the home was built, try to get an idea, was it built after 1975? Then hopefully it's grouted. But in general, those are the biggest reasons we have to take the wells out. Another one, in Morrison, this is a little bit higher than I think the other ones. Point sources were higher. And then hand-dug wells, that was a big one in Morrison. So that's not really typical of all the counties. They're all a little bit different. When I was looking at Olmsted's last night, I also realized in Olmsted County, and it's probably going to be the same in some of the other southeastern counties, there's a lot of shared wells. So people got kits, and then you realize, oh, there's one well, and there's 20 people are using that same well. So then we have to just one kit per well. So we have to dissect that and figure out where that's coming from. Oh, and another thing is generally, it's about 10% of the wells end up getting removed from that initial data set. Okay, so the follow-up sampling has happened in 10 counties, have gone through that first and second step. The blue counties happened in 2014 and 15, green 2016. Those are Benton, Dakota, Olmsted, Otter Tail, Pope, Morrison, Sherburn, Stearns, Wadena, and Washington. Otter Tail is half done. We had a lot of lake cabins that we had to still get back to last spring, so the rest of those are going to be finished this year. So follow-up sampling from this past summer, we had about 2,400 homeowners we thought we were going to offer the kits to, or the follow-up testing to, in 10 counties, and about 1,100 agreed to participate. So that's right at that 46% response rate. So it's what we expected. I think, though, we might have had lower detections last year. So it was slightly different than the years before. So, okay, final nitrate results for that step two analysis. So this map is showing the hatch marks are the townships that are still in progress, are in that initial phase. The ones with just the colors are the ones that are final, and that's kind of their final designation for now. Out of the 93 townships that have been finalized, 20 still had at least 10% of their wells over the health risk limit. And then you can see in this initial column, we still have 28 that are pending, and those will all be done this winter. Two of these I wanted to point out that even after taking out, you know, a lot of wells that we didn't know anything about, we still had two townships that were really high. Over 40% of their wells were over the health risk limit. Marchand Township in Dakota County and Agram Township in Morrison County. So how will township testing information be used now? So at this point, so those 20 townships that, you know, we highlighted. So first, if the nitrate levels in the township are low, we'll continue to promote and educate about nitrogen BMPs. If they're high, so 10% or over 10, we'll be working with the agricultural community in that area. And it's going to involve following the steps in the NFMP and the proposed rule. But basically, it'll look like we'll be working with local advisory teams. They'll be evaluating nitrogen BMPs, and then we'll be designing and installing a local monitoring network. So that's when we'll get to start working more in that really local scale. And then if BMPs are adopted, they'll continue that voluntary approach. If they're not adopted, then that's what can potentially move them into a regulatory approach. So that's it for my nitrate part of that. And so Jeff is going to kind of move into the pesticide monitoring portion.
Okay. Sorry for the delay. This is technically the same presentation, but Kim and I realized that probably both of our presentations would be evolving. I can't speak for Kim right now, but I know that mine evolved this morning still. So, hi, my name's Jeff Paddock. Thank you for having me and listening to my presentation. I'm going to talk briefly about the Private Well Pesticide Sampling, or PWPS, project. Kim alluded to it a little earlier in her presentation, but I'm going to expand on the results a little bit. So basically, homeowners that had a nitrate detection during the initial township testing program sampling have the opportunity to have their wells sampled again for pesticides and for nitrate. So that's step two of the township testing program, as Kim had previously described. The pesticide sampling is covered under the pesticide well, or the private well pesticide, or PWPS project. So in other words, the PWPS project is the pesticide component of the township testing program. Both projects and programs are very interconnected. The map on the left indicates the townships and counties that were sampled for pesticides and the townships and counties that are projected to be sampled for pesticides. And you'll probably notice that this map looks very similar to the maps that Kim had already presented. We're sampling for pesticides in wells that had a nitrate detection during the initial township testing program. So they're the same townships, the same counties, the same vulnerable townships, and the same townships that had high agricultural production. I'm just going to break down the number of samples that we've done so far. From 2014 to 2016, we analyzed 2,625 wells in 10 counties for pesticides. For the 2017 sampling season, we analyzed about 1,110 wells. We still haven't gotten all the results back from those wells. We're probably at about 75% right now. So the results are still pending for those. Overall, we anticipate that there'll be about 6,300 wells sampled for pesticide by the time the project concludes in 2020. When we first started the PWPS project, we had hoped that the MDA laboratory would be able to analyze the samples. But they were unable to analyze the samples just due to the sheer volume of samples that we would be submitting. So we contracted with a private laboratory. The first private laboratory that we contracted with was able to analyze a list of 20 pesticides and two pesticide degradates. We call that list MDA List 1 Pesticides. So for the 2014 and 2015 sampling season, we analyzed 1,800 wells for basically 22 pesticides. During those two sampling seasons, we had 6 pesticide detections out of the 1,800 wells sampled. Prior to the 2016 sampling season, we came to the realization that we wanted to identify a private laboratory that could analyze samples or do a method that was more similar to what the MDA laboratory could analyze. So in other words, we wanted to be able to analyze a larger list of pesticides, particularly herbicide and pesticide degradates. And we also wanted MRLs at a lower concentration. So we wanted MRLs that were in the parts per trillion range or micrograms per liter, or I'm sorry, nanograms per liter range. We were able to identify a private laboratory out of California that could analyze for 124 pesticides. All of their MRLs are nanogram per liter. So the 2016 sampling, we basically used that laboratory. We intend to use that laboratory or a similar laboratory through the conclusion of the project. We also intend to go back and resample all of the wells that we sampled in 2014 and 2015 using that full list of 124 pesticides. The counties that haven't been sampled for pesticides yet will get preferential treatment. So as time and budget allow, we'll go back and resample those counties that were sampled in 2014 and 2015. So finally, I'll get into the results a little bit. So the map on the right indicates the townships and the counties that were sampled in 2016. We sampled 1,171 wells in 2016, mostly in 5 counties. We did have some, as Kim mentioned, we did have some county, wells sampled in other counties that were left over from the previous year. But basically, most of the samples were in 5 counties. Those were Dakota, Polk, Morrison, Ottertail, and Sherbourne. Basically, we had 375 wells in Dakota County. Those were resamples. Those were wells that had been sampled in 2014 and 2015. whereas the wells in the four other counties had not been sampled for pesticides. So here's the results a little bit. So basically, we had a pesticide detection and pesticide degradant detection in 76% of the wells sampled in 2016. We detected 53 different pesticides or pesticide degradants. Metolachlor ESA, which is a corn herbicide degradant, was the most frequently detected pesticide. We detected that in 70% of the wells. So this table is meant to represent, it's meant to show the concentration. So basically there's 9 pesticides that were detected at greater than 5% detection frequency. If you take a look at the median, 7 out of 9 of those, the median is below the MRL. And then if you also take a look at the maximum, most of the maximums are well below the health reference value. So the point of this slide is to show that in most cases, the detections were very low. There was one exception. We did have a diuron exceedance in Sherbourne County. When we first went and sampled the well, the diuron concentration was 3 times the health reference value. And just for reference, I guess diuron is a herbicide that's typically used in right-of-ways. We've gone back to that well and we've sampled it 4 additional times. Every single time that we've went back and resampled it, it's been non-detect. We've also tried to identify a spill or a point source adjacent to that well, and we've been unable to do that. So we think that that was likely a one-time occurrence. Continuing with the 2016 results, 83% of the herbicide of the detections were herbicide degradants, 14% were herbicides, 2% were insecticides, and 1% were fungicides. Overall, we sampled for 6 neonicotinoids. We detected 3 neonicotinoids. The highest one was clothianidin, and that was with a 2% detection frequency. We sampled all of the wells for glyphosate and glyphosate's degradant, which is AMPA. We didn't get any glyphosate detections. We got 1 AMPA detection, which was well below the health reference value in Morrison County. The table on the right indicates the number of pesticide detections that we had in each well. 12% of the wells sampled had a single pesticide detection, but it was much more common to get multiple pesticides detected in a single well. The highest number that we had was 15 pesticides in one well. Typically, the numbers ran from anywhere from 2 to 5 different pesticides detected in a single well. Most of the concentrations were very low, but we also compile the results and then send them over to the MDH to do a cumulative risk assessment. And there was nothing that in the 2016 results that exceeded the cumulative risk assessment for the samples. So this is basically a county-by-county breakdown. Again, we mainly sampled 5 counties in 2016. The detection frequency ranged from 46% to 93%. Dakota County had the highest detection frequency at 93%, whereas Polk had the lowest at 46%. The number of pesticides detected per county ranged from 12 to 41. Otter Tail had the highest with 41, and Polk, again, had the lowest with 12. I mentioned that we wanted to compare the PWPS results to the MDA Ambient Monitoring Network results. So basically, the MDA breaks up Minnesota into 10 pesticide monitoring regions based on agricultural practices and geologic characteristics. And based on, there's typically monitoring wells in most of those PMRs. We focused on PMR-4, which is the Central Sands area. I don't know if you can see the PMRs in the corner, but it's the central area of the state. We focus on that because there's large glacial outwash sand plains. It's highly sensitive to surface activities. Irrigated fields are common. And 4 of the 5 PWPS counties sampled in 2016 were located in PMR-4. So we had a large number of samples to compare to the MDA Ambient Monitoring Program. There were 88 samples collected as part of the MDA Ambient Monitoring Program in PMR-4 in 2016. So here's the results again. Specific pesticides and pesticide degradants that were detected compared favorably between samples collected between the 2 different projects. So the PWPS samples are very similar to what we see with PMR-4 ambient monitoring sampling. There were some oddball samples every once in a while in the PWPS sampling, but for the most cases, they were similar. the table again represents pesticides that were detected at a greater than 5% detection frequency. The first two columns indicate the number of samples. There were 794 samples collected in PMR4 as part of the PWPS project, and 88 samples collected in PMR4 for the ambient monitoring. Typically, when you compare the two results, the detection frequency for the ambient monitoring wells is typically higher, and the concentrations are also typically higher for the ambient monitoring wells than what we see with the PWPS project. And we think there's a pretty specific reason for that, is that the wells for the ambient monitoring program are typically located adjacent to agricultural chemical fields. They're typically very shallow. They're typically located in highly vulnerable areas. So they're kind of the worst case scenario. Whereas wells that we sampled for the PWPS project are typically Varymore. We do have a lot of hand dug wells. We do have a lot of sand point wells, but then we also have deeper wells, you know, that are 80 feet deep, 100 feet deep. They're located throughout, typically a little more throughout the township. They're not all located next to an agricultural chemical field. So typically the higher detection frequencies and the higher concentrations, we consider that likely due to location and depth of the ambient monitoring wells. And then finally, we looked into nitrate and pesticide co-occurrence. So in general, as the concentration of nitrate increases, the likelihood of detecting at least one pesticide increases, and that's what this table is supposed to represent. So the column on the left indicates wells that had less than 1 mg/L nitrate. We found that the frequency of occurrence of at least one pesticide in those wells was 46%. However, as you go over, the column on the right represents wells that had a nitrate concentration of more than 10 mg/L. And we found that the frequency of occurrence in those wells of at least one pesticide was 97%. So it went from 46% to 97%. And again, that's typically what we find in our ambient monitoring program. So finally, in summary, and I'm going to do a summary for both of, I guess, the presentations. Local partners and private well owners are the cornerstone of this program. Approximately 20,042 wells were sampled for nitrate in 19 counties between 2013 and 2016. Nitrate concentrations in 9.5% of those wells were greater than or equal to 10 mg/L. By the end of 2019, over 30,000 homeowners will have tested their well for nitrate. Pesticides were detected in 76% of the wells sampled in 2016. Concentrations were generally very low and compared to results from the MDA's ambient monitoring program. Most commonly detected pesticides were also similar to the MDA's ambient monitoring program, and were more likely to see pesticide detections in wells with elevated nitrate. And then finally, for additional information, there's links for the township testing program, for the nitrogen fertilizer management plan, for the draft nitrogen fertilizer rule, for the PWPS project, and for the pesticide monitoring well network, which is the ambient monitoring well program. And then finally, if there's any questions.
I think we'll have time for one question.
A couple quick ones. The detections, I'm a little confused on the, you get a detection of nitrate and then you'll resample the well, but in several areas of the state, natural background levels are 1 to 3 parts per million. It just seems like a waste of money, so to speak, to go back and test something that's a natural background level.
What we were tasked with is any location that has a pesticide detection, or I'm sorry, a nitrate detection, those homeowners have the opportunity to have their well sampled for nitrate and for pesticide again. So it's anything from above the method reporting limit to a higher concentration.
Yeah, I'll just add that was in the appropriation. So you have no well sampled.
You know, I'd let this night appropriation.
All right, thank you, Jeff and Kim.